It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys of law, the right advice at the right time. Joining us this morning is Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing well. What are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about the fact that it's the 1st of August, and it's mighty hot out there.
That's right.
But wonderful. Ben, last week, Wes and I talked about the rights of the spouse in the state of North Carolina. There are just so very many. The right to qualify as the administrator of an estate, the first preference, if you will, many times to be the guardian of your potential spouse, of your prospective spouse, the right to dissent from the will and declare an elective share, the right to a year's allowance. And we've been kind of demystifying and explaining in more detail these various rights. Ben, most of these things follow pretty logically when they are applied against, you know, the long-term kind of Ozzie and Harriet marriage.
Right.
You know, the folks who have been blessed with a 60-year marriage. They have been married the one time. They have two or three children. These things, you know, in that context, more or less, you know, there are very few problems usually.
Right.
Where the problem arises is that now, of course, so many folks are in second marriages or third marriages. And many times this is because they've lost a spouse to a cancer or something of that nature. And they later in life elect to get married again. And they many times have children from a prior marriage. And now, of course, they, in their relationship and in their conversation around the breakfast table, they absolutely desire that their estates and that their assets many times be kept separately and distinct and passed to their respective children. Upon the death of either one, they want their child to still be their power of attorney, to still be their executor of their estate. But the law now, Ben, comes forward and doesn't necessarily cooperate with this kitchen table conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, because it still favors, it stems from a long history, right?
It does. It does. And I appreciate you bringing that forward, Ben. You know, the there is a huge historical precedent, you know, in our common law that favors the right of the spouse. And, of course, anciently we know that this was known as the dower interest, the curtsy interest in an estate. And these are the lingerings of this, of these laws, as well as this philosophy of law that a spouse should rise to the highest level in terms of being protected. Now, recently, and when I say recently, it takes a few years, a couple years for these things to kind of sink in and really start applying. But here within the last, really October of 2013, our new elective share statute in the state of North Carolina became the law. So we've been living with this now going on about 3 years. And of course, the law begins by saying that if the decedent and the surviving spouse have been married for 5 years, for less than 5 years, then the surviving spouse is entitled to 15% of the decedent's net estate. And if the decedent and the spouse were married for 5 years, but less than 10 years, then it jumps to 25%. That's a high percentage, Ben.
Yes, right.
And 5 years, 6 years, 7 years of marriage flies by. You know, it's not, doesn't take very long. Now, after we get over 10 years, but less than 15 years, we jump again to 33% of the estate. That's 10 years to less than 15. So 10, 12, 13, 14. And then, of course, after 15 years, we jump at that point to the
to 50
to the 50%. Yeah. Okay, and so 15 years or more, we jump to 50%.
Right.
So now, what are we really saying here, Ben? What we are saying is that if I have a client who comes in, and he or she say, Cecil, I am in a second marriage. I lost my wife about 4 or 5 years ago to cancer. I'm now in a relationship, and I am enjoying Mary Sue very much, and we want to get married. Tell me about the new elective share statute.
Right.
And, of course, what I would advise in this context is that these folks have now more than ever a premarital agreement known as a prenuptial agreement. An antenuptial agreement sometime, again, before the marriage, that sets forth that they are going to be able to keep their assets separate and distinct, notwithstanding their marriage. If for some reason this client shifts the facts a bit and says to me, you know, I got married 10 years ago after I lost my wife to cancer, my Mary Sue and I, we did not do a prenuptial, Cecil. We have agreed always that our assets would go separately to our children. We still want that to be the case, but we read something in a magazine or we heard you on the radio talk about the fact that, that we have a right to dissent to the wills, even though they leave everything to our children. What can we do about this?
Right.
The answer to that question is that we are able to create a trust known as an elective share trust, whereby this percentage that is applicable, and keep in mind, we don't know exactly what that percentage is going to be.
That's because it changes over time.
It changes over time, and no one has died yet.
Right.
We may be in 10 years of marriage now, but in another 5 years, we'll be at 15. Mm-hmm. The percentage goes to 50%. After 15. And so as a result of that, the language is that whatever the elective share happens to be, whatever percentage it happens to be,
right,
that percentage goes into a trust for our spouse. And they receive a lifetime of income from that trust. But upon the death of the surviving spouse, at that point, the assets in that trust pass back to the children of the husband or whoever it would happen to be.
Right.
Now, this is known as an elective share trust, and this would apply in the facts that I've put forward where folks clearly have their kitchen table agreement that things are going to stay separate and distinct. They're in a 10 or 15 or 20-year second marriage, even a 7-year second marriage, but they, for whatever reason, did not at the time have a prenuptial agreement that specifically addressed this elective share.
Okay, so a prenuptial agreement can preempt that elective share?
It can.
Okay.
It absolutely can, yes.
Okay, but otherwise, if you go to the idea of the elective share trust, then you are not entirely able to pass along those assets as your tabletop agreement may have been, right? I mean, you're going to have some for your spouse, right? It's going to go into that elective share. It'd be the remainder of that trust. Would go back to the.
The trust would be funded, if you will. It would be created with the applicable elective share percentage. That would be the corpus. That would be the beginning balance of the trust.
So,
because keep in mind, Ben, if we don't have this trust, then that percentage, that elective share percentage, would just simply go to the spouse.
Right.
In
right.
their name, with no constraints, no strings attached, as we lawyers would say, and eventually would pass very likely to their children. So the trust steps up to the plate and holds the elective share percentage, provides an annual stipend to the spouse, But then says that when she then dies, this resource, this percentage of assets goes back to the children from the prior marriage.
All right. If you have questions, it's a good time to call during our break, and we'll set up the question for Cecil at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back. 7:46 in the morning here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And joining us, Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law. We're talking about special protections for spouses.
We are, Ben. One of your questions during the break was, assuming that we have the selective share trust, which, as we've already discussed, is the mechanism, if you will. It's the holding pot for this elective share percentage of the deceased spouse. It provides an income at least annually to the surviving spouse. And then your question was whether or not the spouse would be entitled to principal distributions.
Yeah, can she break the trust, essentially?
Well, she can't break the trust, but she is entitled to principal distributions according to the ascertainable standard of health support, maintenance and welfare. And so if it is for her welfare, if it can be deemed to be for her health care, for her maintenance in any way, then of course the trustee would be authorized to use principal, Ben, in addition to income to support the spouse. It's also important to mention that the trustee of this trust must be what the statute defines as a non-adverse trustee. It cannot be a person who has any beneficial interest in the trust. So, for instance, it cannot be the child of the husband, okay, who eventually is going to inherit the corpus of this trust. It has to be someone more independent than that, someone, as the statute defines, as non-adverse.
Now, are there, is that usually going to be, or I guess the law, again, is still pretty new, but is this often a friend? Is this a, or are there, or is this an attorney? Is this a bank? Or?
Well, it is, it's not as much. Banks are less and less.
Trust departments.
Yes, yeah. And banks seem to have faded a bit. Although they certainly are alive and well for larger estates under certain circumstances, but there has been a decline in banks serving as trustees. And so, yes, it would be you know, a sibling. A niece, a nephew, someone possibly in the family that would be fair, but that could be under the definition of the non-adverse trustee statute would qualify. Because a niece, a nephew, a brother, a sister, they most likely would not be necessarily a direct beneficiary of the corpus of the trust. The purpose here is to pass the corpus of the trust most likely back to the children and or grandchildren of the husband or wife. Now, but we're beginning to see, Ben, a little bit, this is a good place to be right now, because your questions are leading us to a place that we're seeing that, you know, this is not the most, this is a fix, if you will. Okay. What would have been nice for John to have done before he got married 10 years ago would have been to have the premarital agreement. And then we would not have to be going around our elbow to get to our thumb, if you will, with this trust in order to protect his corpus, if you will, his estate, from some sort of difference of intent between he and his wife. And if they had reduced that to writing before they got married, then we would not need this spousal trust or the selective share trust.
So the prenuptial agreement, again, could spell this out.
And more important than ever.
Yeah, right.
More important than ever in light of this new statute.
Now, of course, it's selective share, and it's not the only one, but it also works that it's the greater of the two. For example, if the will does leave more, then the spouse would be entitled to more.
That's correct. That's correct. Yes. But that's rare, with folks to leave their estate in a second and third marriage directly to their spouse, to the exclusion of their children. Again, I mean, all of these things are a matter of the facts and the circumstances that are at the table. Mm-hmm. But yes, if the husband is just willing to leave everything to his spouse, notwithstanding the fact that he's got children from a prior marriage, then there again, we don't necessarily have a problem.
Now you could have, again, if you have the kind of will where everything is left to a spouse, but a child challenges that and say it was for the various reasons that we've talked about before, the caveat that there may be problems with the will, that may have been under duress, may not have been in capacity, but the elective share could still then kick in.
Well, that's correct. If it were
successfully challenged.
What you're really touching upon is the fact that what John could say back to me in the conference is that, well, Cecil, I appreciate you telling me that my wife has this 25% interest in my estate, but she's not going to elect that. We have agreed that if I die, she will not do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. This would be a fairly common thing that I would hear because that is what they've agreed to.
Right. Right.
What I then have to say in response to that, which is very real, Ben, we have a number of cases in our office where these are the facts, is that these folks, let's keep in mind, are getting older and older and older, as we all are.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this election, although Mary Sue never intends to make it, her agent under her attorney under her power of attorney,
right,
due to their fiduciary duty and responsibility, would be required to make it. So I have to say back to John, you have to add to the conditions, not only does she not do it out of an intention, but she must be competent. She cannot be sick or frail or infirm in any way, because if she is, her children, under her power of attorney, would likely be advised to make the election, notwithstanding the fact that Mom never really would want that to occur.
Right.
Gets very complicated, Ben.
All right. We have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. And you can join us here at 800-818-2255 or 247-7282 or 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak, and also Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins every Tuesday morning, and you can go to harvellandcollins.com and find out more about how to contact the folks there and get them working on your legal life as well. Again, talking about the elective share and the new law, you said it's only a few years old.
It is October of 13, and so we are, what does that put us into this about?
Almost
3 years now. Yes.
So it's getting its test, really.
It is. And these elective share trusts are many of them are papered up We have just many, many at our office that if when I say papered up, I mm-hmm. mean they are in the documents, but maybe there's not been a death yet. So there's not been the trust have not been funded. They have not gone into operation, if you will. But we are not concerned about them going into operation. They operate much like other kinds of spousal trust mm-hmm. that we estate lawyers have been living with and implementing for many years. It's not much different. Some of our listeners might recognize the terminology AB trust, credit shelter trust, disclaimer trust, Q-tip trust. All of those kinds of trust are also for the benefit of a surviving spouse. Mm-hmm. And with principal distribution, according to an ascertainable standard, care, support, maintenance, and welfare, income distribution, at least quarterly or annually. So it's not so different than those kinds of trust. Mm-hmm. This new, if you will, elective share trust. Mm-hmm. It's similar in nature to the spousal trust that we had for many years that helped us with mitigating estate tax.
Mm-hmm. Did this new law, did this help solve an issue that was out there before?
Well, I don't know that it helped solve anything as much as it just, again, affirmed the historical mm-hmm. and legislative intent of putting a spouse at the top of the heap.
Mm-hmm.
This is just something that this is a philosophy of law that has been in effect for hundreds and hundreds of years. As I mentioned earlier, the dower curtsy rights coming over from England. And it continues to be a part of the body of law in the state of North Carolina. Spouses are highly coveted in our law. This is a philosophy that has not changed. It's a tradition, and it is very alive and well in the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And this statute just simply serves to codify that, to make it more clear what the percentages happen to be in relationship to the number of years of marriage, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this exist alongside? Isn't there still like a spousal allowance?
There is a spousal allowance known as the year's support, and that is applicable. And is to the exclusion of any creditors. That's the primary place that it gets applied is mm-hmm. that this is a stipend off the top of the estate to the exclusion of any creditors. That applies, though it does apply in all estates, Ben, but it usually is applicable in a much smaller estate. Mm-hmm. Let's say an estate, $50,000-$60,000 of resource mm-hmm. passing to the spouse, but yet there's debt.
Mm-hmm.
Medical cost,
right.
Credit card debt, whatever the debt happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
Our law at that point, again, philosophically, putting the spouse at the top of the heap says, well, we're going to let the first $30,000
mm-hmm.
go to the spouse.
Right.
Okay.
And you fight over the rest.
And your creditors can have the rest, but we're going to protect our spouse.
Okay.
Yes.
If you want to find out more, you can contact the folks at Harbaugh & Collins Attorneys at Law at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Give them a call at 252-726-9050, 726-9050, online at harbaughandcollins.com.